34. In downtown Reno, there was a high-rise hotel casino that had somehow managed to go bankrupt. The new owners converted the building into luxury timeshare condos and divided the top two floors into luxury penthouses. Jimmy materialized in one of these, the one he had purchased. It was the less expensive of the two, but it had what Jimmy believed was the best view in Reno, because it faced away from Reno and toward the mountains. He bought the place new. It came fully furnished. The first thing he did was hire a decorator and gave her one instruction: make it look like it's not in Reno. As a result, he had a home full of expensive-looking, understated furniture. His designer got a nice fat payday, and the local second-hand shops were flooded with brand-new furniture made mostly of mirrors, pleather, and gold electroplate. Jimmy spent a moment enjoying the view. These transitional moments in life always left him feeling a bit wistful. He didn't think he would miss Lead Church. He knew he wouldn't miss having everybody treat him like a monster. He had the sneaking suspicion that he might miss having people know that he was a monster. There was a certain amount of respect that came with the monstrousness. Nobody liked him in Lead Church, but everybody was aware of his work. Jimmy didn't know what he would do with the rest of his life, but he knew what the first step had to be. He took a deep breath, turned, and faced Todd, who was sitting comfortably in Jimmy's Eames lounge chair. Todd said,
"I love this chair."
"I thought you might." "Of course," Jimmy thought, "Tyler would consider putting that chair in a wealthy bachelor's penthouse a cliché."
The idea brought Jimmy more than a little pleasure.
"Did they buy it?"
Todd asked.
"Well enough," Jimmy answered.
Jimmy sat down on the black leather couch opposite Todd, and the two men looked at each other for a few seconds before Jimmy broke the silence.
"I sense you have questions, Todd."
Todd said,
"I did everything you asked me to, didn't I? I gave you the password to my drive. I told you exactly where and when I killed Jeff. I showed you all my macros, and I pretended you'd starve me to get me to talk."
Jimmy said, "Yes, those are the things I asked you to do, and you did all of them."
"So why can't I move?"
Todd asked. Jimmy smiled.
"I'll explain that in a minute, but first, I have a question for you. Todd, what have we learned?"
"What?"
"What have you learned?" Jimmy clarified. "What has this experience taught you?"
Todd thought for a moment, then said,
"Not to underestimate you and your buddies?"
Jimmy smiled broadly.
"Todd, they aren't my buddies. They'd have been the first people to tell you that if you just asked. You do have a point, though, in a way. As a group, they do have a talent for messing up plans. Both other people's and their own."
Todd squinted at Jimmy.
"What do you mean? They beat me."
"Yes, but not according to their plans. Heck, the main plan they live their lives by is to settle in and try to be left alone. But they behave in such a way as to make even that impossible. What else did you learn?"
Todd was silent.
Jimmy shrugged and said, "Nothing? Fair enough. It's my turn anyway. Here's what I learned. There are some mistakes you can never make up for. There are things you do wrong that you can never make right. That doesn't mean you shouldn't try. You should. But if it becomes clear that you won't succeed, drop it. To force the issue just tortures the people you wronged in the first place. Once you've made your feelings clear, it's better to leave and get on with your life."
Jimmy studied Todd's face, looking for some hint of understanding.
"Take me, for example," Jimmy continued. "There are, in a sense, three of me. The Jimmy I was, the Jimmy I am today, and the Jimmy I want to be tomorrow. I can't change how the Jimmy I was behaved. I know how I want the Jimmy of tomorrow to act. I'm neither of those guys. I'm the Jimmy of today. But, theoretically, by behaving like I hope the Jimmy of tomorrow will act, I can make the Jimmy of today less like yesterday's Jimmy. See what I mean?"
Todd said, I think so.
You have to think about it? Jimmy asked.
Todd said,
No.
Jimmy leaned forward, just that much closer to Todd, to drive his point just that much further home.
Past Jimmy, he explained. Would it have taken someone like you? Someone clever, but not smart? And he would have lied and manipulated and used you for his own profit.
Jimmy studied Todd, who was immobile, save for his mouth and facial expressions, looking for some sign that he understood. Jimmy locked eyes with Todd and continued.
Future Jimmy, on the other hand, would have done what he said he was going to do. He'd have destroyed you quickly and humanely, because that was the only way to keep the people he had wronged safe from you, and because I want future Jimmy to be a man of his word.
What's present Jimmy gonna do?
Jimmy said.
Present Jimmy isn't sure. He's one of life's little ironies. I tried to kill Philip Martin and their friends, and I failed. Now I feel responsible for making sure nobody else kills them either. That said, I don't really like the idea of killing you. I told them I would erase you, and I still could. It would be instant and painless. I could also reinstate your magnetic field, send you back to the facility, and send word to Miller and Murphy to make sure no computer is ever brought anywhere near you again. You'd most likely die of old age after several more decades of solitary confinement and reading about video games.
Well, what do you think you're going to do?
Todd asked.
I think I'm going to err on the side of mercy.
Okay,
Todd said.
Which of those options is the merciful one?
Jimmy said,
I don't know. You tell me.
Todd looked out the window at the Sierra Nevada mountains, thought for a while, then said,
I don't want to go back to prison.
Jimmy said,
Fair enough.
He stood up, crossed the room, placed the palm of his hand on Todd's forehead like a faith healer, and said,
Execute Todd Disposition Macro 2.
Todd was gone. Jimmy spent a long time looking out the window, thinking about what he had done. Then he turned around and walked into his office. His computer was just as he left it, juiced up and ready for work. Jimmy sat down, cracked his knuckles, and got on with his life.